Hey everybody, I'm Carl Azuz here at the CNN Center. We want to thank you for stopping in to check out this brand new edition of CNN Student News. Got a full show lined up for you today, so to get you ready for our first story, let's open up the dictionary and expand our vocabulary.
A word to the wise. Union, an organization of workers such as a labor union.
Members of one of America's largest unions are back in the job after the end of a two-day strike. The United Auto Workers, or UAW, reached a tentative agreement with General Motors yesterday. Two sides worked through a marathon negotiating session and came up with a deal around 3 a.m. Wednesday. The agreement ended a two-day work stoppage. It started on Monday when 73,000 UAW members walked off the job and hit the picket lines. The strike closed down 80 GM plants and parts centers across 30 states. But now that's over. The union's president says he is happy with the resolution.
A lot of hard work has went into it, and we successfully resolved a lot of difficult issues. This bargaining committee gave it their all under the leadership of Vice President Cal Rapson and his staff. We feel very good about this tentative agreement.
And his counterpart agrees. The chairman and CEO of General Motors said, quote, "This agreement will allow us to maintain a strong manufacturing presence in the United States." A positive ending to what he called one of the most complex and difficult bargaining sessions in the history of the GM-UAW relationship. Members of the UAW are expected to start voting on the agreement later this week. Now we have some new developments in a story we told you about yesterday. The United Nations is sending a special envoy, or diplomatic agent, to Myanmar. Buddhist monks have been leading protests in the Southeast Asian nation for more than a week now. Thousands of demonstrators have filled the streets of Myanmar's capital city, and according to multiple reports, some clashes between security forces and protesters have turned violent. The rallies are calling for democracy in the country, which has been under military rule for more than 40 years. So the question, where exactly is Myanmar located? Our downloadable maps can help you track it down, but labeling them is up to you. Log on to CNNStudentNews.com and scroll down to the maps section to check out these free resources.
Time for the shout-out. Which of these documents granted freedoms to the English in the year 1215? Was it the Monroe Doctrine, Treaty of Ghent, the Bill of Rights, or the Magna Carta? You've got 3 seconds. Go! England's King John issued the Magna Carta, which later inspired the Founding Fathers in creating the U.S. Constitution. That's your answer, and that's your shout-out.
All right, now do the math on that shout-out, and you'll realize that the Magna Carta was signed almost 800 years ago. Probably seems like ancient history, but the historic document, which means Great Charter in Latin, isn't just something in the pages of a textbook. It is for real, and it is for sale. So before the bidding starts, let's look at just how influential the Magna Carta has been. Sotheby's Auction House says it's the most important document ever sold. Of course, they're the ones trying to sell it, but it'd be a mistake to overlook the historical significance of the Magna Carta.
If you try and work back from the freedoms we have today to when the first seeds were planted, it's Magna Carta. Magna Carta is the birth certificate.
And that's true for a lot of countries. In fact, ideas expressed in the national and state constitutions of the U.S. were actually lifted directly from the Magna Carta.
It's the first stepping stone in a group of documents which have completely and totally made our lives. The Magna Carta, the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, the Gettysburg Address.
Now, what's for sale at Sotheby's isn't the only document, of course. It's a 710-year-old copy, which means it was penned and put into English law a little more than 80 years after King John signed the first charter. This one will be up for auction in December, and if you want it, all you'll need is about 20 or 30 million. Hey, history ain't cheap. Go fly a kite. Sounds pretty hokey, but it used to be something you'd say to get someone to leave you alone, something along the lines of, get out of here, get lost. Well, in Afghanistan, telling someone to fly a kite has a lot more meaning. Nick Robertson explains the hobby's long history in the Asian country.
kite flying is not just a calm afternoon passion here, but a centuries-old competitive sport, a passion. The Taliban repressed it. Now it's beginning to flourish anew. A best-selling American book, The Kite Runner, and a Hollywood movie based on it and coming out soon, are showing how central it is to life here, its ferocity mirroring Afghanistan's harsh ways. Working in his mud-built house in Kabul, Mohammed is a fourth-generation kite maker and competitor, perhaps Kabul's most famous. Last year, he won a national award for kite making, but says he's even better at kite fighting. His children are learning too. The family is well known here. Now a measure of fame is headed its way. Mohammed has been asked to train actors for the big-budget Paramount Pictures movie.
They came here, they asked, and they found out that I'm the best in this kite flying market, and therefore they send those two boys to be trained by me.
Easy for this 50-year-old father of 12. He's been teaching his children for decades. The key to the sport is not just to fly the kite, but use the glass-covered string to cut the threads of an opponent's. When he can, he likes to work outside. He lives in the graveyard, he says, because it's close to his market, the old traditional part of town. As he whittles, his kites rise and tumble from neighboring roofs. His boast, he's the best in the business, almost cost him his role in helping the movie makers.
Shopkeepers do not want me to be more famous, and they do not give my address to them. Therefore, they say they send them to someone else. But finally, people can find me.
He learned from his father, who learned from his, who learned from his. More than 100 years of wisdom, outlasting invading armies and kings. 6-year-old Sabra and 5-year-old Sabur instinctively know their part in this ancient craft. Sabra sells her own kites for a couple of cents. 13-year-old Hassan works alone. He earns $20 a kite. He's the only one who's been told the secret to the family's success.
The secret glue. What's inside? What's the secret?
His answer, simple. He's not telling. If he did, he says, I'd steal his business. He gets $200 for the best kites. That's a lot of money here. 3 times the average monthly government salary. So competitive is the market, he marks his kites with a scorpion to prevent imitations and brags he gets orders of 500 kites at a time.
And this is where people come to do battle with their kites, on a hill overlooking Kabul. And there's plenty of evidence of those battles. String litters the ground everywhere.
On the war-scarred hillside, the pages of Kite Runner are played out. Young boys chase the losers' fallen kites and keep them as trophies. But for Mohammed, there is always one nagging worry.
Sometimes I ask my mother that, am I famous or what? Or my dad was famous. But my mom answers that, no, you're one step ahead of your father.
If the movie is half as popular as the book, he can stop worrying about who's the best until his children grow up. Nick Robertson, CNN, Kabul, Afghanistan.
Last up today, we've got a new video that is burning up the internet.
C'est l'histoire de trois chiffres, le 118.
Having some trouble understanding those lyrics? Well, that might be because this single is from Switzerland, and the artists aren't just throwing down some hot beats. They are busting out the digits of the fire department's emergency phone number. Yeah, this is actually an informational ad campaign. Firemen thought it'd be a creative way for people to remember their number. Well, it's certainly memorable. And that's a wrap for our show today. Check back with us tomorrow for more commercial-free CNN student news. Until then, I'm Carl Azus.
T'as pas idée, toute la journée on se fait déranger. Non monsieur, on n'a pas le téléphone de l'office des impôts.
Hey man, t'as pas compris qu'ici c'est pas une agence, mais une putain de centrale d'urgence.
118, à faire pas du grimpir. Le 118, t'es capable de t'en rappeler.
Si ça sent le gaz et avant que ça explose, c'est le 118 qu'il faut que tu composes.